Hello everyone and welcome to hashtag Team Early Childhood Podcast. I hope everyone's having a lovely week. This week we've got Maureen Hunt joining us. Hi Maureen.
Hi Aaron, nice to be here.
How are you?
I'm really well, how are you?
I'm okay, thank you. Lots going on, but it's lovely to connect with you.
Yeah, so
Maureen, you're going to be talking to us this week about creating learning partnerships with parents.
That's right.
And obviously looking at child-centred approaches that come within that.
Yep, that's right.
Great. So without further ado, Maureen, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Right. So I trained as a nursery infant teacher way back, I have to say, in the late 70s. So it's a long, long time ago.
I wasn't even born then, Maureen.
Exactly. Neither of the people who are listening to this, I suspect. But it was a very different world then. So there weren't very many jobs outside of the maintained sector in those days. So because there wasn't very much in the way of, you know, nursery provision or childcare or any of those sorts of things then. So I taught mostly in reception and nursery.
Yeah.
I relocated to, that was in Southampton, by the way, yeah. And then I relocated to Cornwall and I took a job with NCH, which are now called Action for Children, and worked with supporting children from sort of vulnerable families. And that was where I first became interested in parents, because it broke down a lot of barriers for me around parents, because actually, even though we were working with some of the most vulnerable and disadvantaged families, they were great and they all wanted the best for their children. They were just operating to a different framework from other people sometimes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know, and it was easy to jump to conclusions about bad parents and about parents that don't care. But actually, I found the opposite. I found, you know, nearly all of them did care and just needed help and support, really. So from there, I went into children's services with a local authority, and I started to run a team, and I was managing childcare development workers, early years advisors,
yeah,
children's centres managers, family support workers, and that was when I began to get involved with the PVI sector, and I began to delve into that and found it quite a different beast, really, from the maintained sector, as we know. So that was really interesting, and that opened my eyes. I spent a few years doing that. I set up six children's centres, right from driving around to find where I could put them, and you know, to managing the budget, to actually getting them built, to putting the staff in, to getting them off the ground. It was a massive piece of work, but I thoroughly loved that because there was lots of money flowing around then. It was great. Those were the halcyon days of early years, I think.
Yeah, well, they were the best days, I think.
Weren't they? Yeah. Just. And we were also full of hope then. We all felt, you know, we really were going to eradicate child poverty by 2020. It was going to happen. Sadly, not to be. So from there, when things sort of changed in the local authority, I used to do some training and development work, took on a headship for a short while.
Yeah.
And then I got my job as Early Years Lead for Achievement for All. And I've been there with them for 7 years. And I designed and set up the Achieving Early programme, which is the programme that supports anybody that works in the early years sector with improving the quality of their provision and the outcomes for children. And that's been a real success and is now you know, rolled out nationally. And I do a bit of consultancy. I write a few articles, blogs, write a book. So that's me.
Well, I've heard about the book, so I'm hoping that you'll be able to tell us a little bit about that when we get to near the end, if that'd be okay. And and I also, just so everybody knows, that me and Maureen have connected because we joined the staff room, don't we? The virtual staff room.
That's right. That's right.
It's been a lifeline for many of us, I would say. So,
because it's been very lonely and isolating the last couple of months.
Yes.
Whilst I have been working on and off, I've been on my own, in, you know, most days. And it's that, having that in the middle of the day is just been a real, so it's been great.
No, it has. It's been great. So you've kind of answered number one, really, which is about your early years journey. And what a journey.
Well, it's a long time, Aaron.
Yeah, well, I know. I kind of look back at my journey, and I know I mean, I've still got about another 20 years to go before I can officially retire. But actually, my journey started very much the same as, you know, early years teaching. But gosh, my career really hit the ground when I was working in children's centres, and that whole early help offer was just immense for me. Oh,
it was just brilliant. It was a brilliant time. It really was.
Yeah, it was. And you could really see the difference that was being made as well, couldn't you? It was,
yes,
there was a whole partnership.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But we never really, you know, got to see the legacy of it, did we?
So no. I think, you know, that we can keep our fingers crossed, can't we? So we'll move on to question number two, because I think you've answered already question number one. So can you explore the concept of creating learning partnerships for parents?
Yeah, so parents often are, how can I put it, they're often recipients of information when their children start school or start a setting. They turn up and they're told things. They're told what to do, and they're told how to dress their children or what they need to bring or what time it is. They're given information and they take it all. And they go away and they do what they're told, largely. That's how, you know, a lot of parent work goes on. And I'm not saying that all settings are like this, because I know there's some fantastic practice out there. But even when there is some really, really nice relationships going on with parents, often it just focuses on eating, drinking, what child's ate, what they've drunk, have they had a sleep, you know, how many times they had their nappy change. And again, it's quite often one-way information. So yeah. Learning partnerships goes one step further, and right from the very get-go, right from the very first contact with a parent, it sees them as equal partners in their child's learning. So parents are given this kind of impression right from the very first time they speak with the setting or get a letter from the setting that they're going to be involved. This is a partnership. And by doing that, it breaks down the barriers, because a lot of parents, there are barriers to getting engaged and involved in their children's education, and this goes right through education. It doesn't just apply to early years, but actually in the early years, you can break the barriers down really quickly, and you can start talking to the parents about the learning and about what their child is doing, and asking them, you know, what their child's doing at home and how they can work together. And settings that have embraced this approach have really found it's worth the effort. And it is an effort. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's easy and it's simple, because it isn't. It is quite complex. But it's definitely worth the effort, and it's definitely worth the resource. So in a nutshell, it's about that mutuality of a relationship where we're both in this together. You're the parent, you know about your child, I'm the practitioner, I know about child development, early learning. Let's put the two things together and let's work out together how to support your child.
Yeah, and that's really, really powerful, isn't it? Because, I mean, I always remember, you know, and going back to the good old children's centre days, you broke down those barriers by going to their home, didn't you? It was very much and we always talked about, I don't know if you felt this, Maureen, but we always felt that, you know, a lot of parents had bad experiences themselves from the education system.
Exactly. Because some parents are literally, you know, scared to come and scared to get involved, and they lack confidence.
Yeah.
And others are just too busy and don't see its importance. Some others, but especially in early years, don't think real learning starts till they go to school. So there's whatever the barriers are, you have to work with them and break them down until you kind of, you know, see through it. There's no such thing as a hard to reach group.
No.
Parents that are hard to reach have all got individual contexts and individual barriers to why they are hard to reach, and you have to look below the surface. It's too easy to say, oh, our parents won't get involved. They're, you know, we've got a lot of hard to reach parents. No, you haven't. You've got a lot of parents who've got all got an individual barrier as to why they're not engaging. Find out what that is, and you can overcome it.
Yeah, I always used to say, because people used to use that all the time, didn't they? Oh, they're hard to reach, you know. And I used to say, yeah, but you haven't found the way to reach them.
That's right.
That's the issue. Yeah. You know, you actually haven't found a way of being able to actually reach them effectively. So it's our job to make sure that we find that way.
Definitely.
Okay then, Maureen, so let's move on to question number three. So how do we engage with parents and what benefits does this have?
Okay, well, let's start with the benefits. Charles DeForge did some research and he found that parents have probably up to about 10 times more influence on children's outcomes when they're very little than the settings do. So even if you have got a child in your setting and your setting is completely outstanding with the very, very best staff that, you know, that you can get, if you're not engaging with the parents sufficiently, the children who are getting really good home learning environment stimulation are going to always do better, and you will never overcome the disadvantage gap. So you need to be looking at how to engage with those parents so that you can begin to influence what they do with their children at home and begin to involve them in their children's learning. So if you set the expectation straight away, as soon as you meet the parents, that this is something that you're going to be doing together and that they should be involved all the way. I mean, it's really a golden opportunity, because for most parents, when their child starts in their early years setting, it's the first kind of doorway into education. And if they get the impression straight away that they're involved, then hopefully you will be sowing that seed for a child's future, really, because those parents will stay engaged, hopefully, all the way through. Obviously, the EPSI research really showed the positive long-term effect of a supportive home learning environment. And that really only happens when parents are supported and encouraged, empowered, and they see the need for it. Otherwise, you know, why would you do anything different to what you've always done? So thinking about, you know, the approach, you'd have to have a very non-judgmental approach, because all parents from all walks of life are going to walk through your door. And all of them want the best for their children. But that might not be the same picture that you have in your mind about how parents should want the best for their children, what parents should do. But you need to be sure that you are not viewing the world through your own lens and you're just quick to judge other people. So you've got to listen to them, view them as the expert. They are the experts around their child. They know so much more about their child than you do. So get them talking about their child. You know, the first thing you should say to them is something like, tell me about your child, you know, and get them talking and get them talking about their aspirations for their child. When you ask parents about their aspirations for their children, it tells you all sorts, because a lot of parents will say things like, well, I hope he does better than I did, and all things like that. Yeah. On the other hand, you might get the parent who says, well, he's never going to be anything because he's a blooming nuisance. And whatever they say, you've got a starting point, because you've got something there that you can start to unpick with parents around, you know, how to work together to get the best for their children. So it's a very, very interesting question to ask, you know, about them.
Do you find that it opens up an avenue for you to be able to have that dialogue with the parent as well, to find out a little bit more about them too?
Absolutely, because if you get a parent who says something like, I hope he does better than I do, you can start saying to them, oh, tell me about that then, tell me, and they will start talking to you, because you are building a relationship, and the relationship is built on mutuality, because you're not sitting there telling them what you think they need to know. That immediately puts you in the power seat and makes parents clam up. But if you start the conversation and build a really effective relationship, you will find that you'll be able to delve much deeper into the context, the aspirations for that family. And you, once you can do that and they begin to trust you, you'll be able to support them in whatever they need.
Okay, so obviously working with parents is a, you know, a real benefit for us all. But Maureen, could you give us some kind of practical ideas, just a few practical ideas that maybe we can take away from this podcast and start thinking about it within our own settings?
Yeah, I mean, first thing I would think that you need to look at is the culture of your organisation. What image are you projecting? What signs have you got up? What does your website say about parents? What does, you know, how is your communications coming across? When you see things like, I don't know if you've ever seen them, the signs outside settings where they say things like greet your child with a smile, not a mobile, you know, and there's a big cross through it. They're very off-putting for parents, and they're very much put parents in the kind of, oh, I'm being told off here. And you want to avoid giving that impression all the time. Also, consider the parent who hides behind their mobile at the end of the day because they don't want to talk to anyone, because they're feeling shy or anxious. They may just be on their mobile because they just think, well, this is going to protect me from having to have eye contact with people or talk to people. So assuming that parents don't care about their children because they're on their mobile phones is a massive judgment. We've got to actually move beyond and think, why is that parent on their mobile phone at the end of the day? Is there something I can do to help them engage better instead of sticking a sign up on the wall, which is only going to put people off? So there are many examples of signs that you put out that are well-meaning, but actually push parents away. They disengage them. Same with letters, when you get things like sending letters home, parents, please do not park on the yellow lines outside the school. Okay, it's always a well-meaning intention behind it, but it really does put the parents in kind of the naughty corner, if you like. Yeah. You're never going to build a relationship with people if you start, you know, trying to instruct them and tell them what to do all the time. So that's what I would think. Look at your website, see how you come across to parents, see how much mutuality there is. See what your communications are like, making sure that parents have got plenty of opportunities to actually communicate with you and send things through to you. It's not all one way. Then I would think, obviously, we've talked a lot about building relationships. One of the best ways to build a relationship is to go to the parents' home. If you can do home visits, they're hugely valuable. They will tell you so much about the child, the family. Parents are on their own ground. They're much more likely to relax and talk to you. So, you know, spend as much time as you can making sure that you build that relationship. If you do come across barriers where parents don't want to engage, think about what it is. Try and unpick what it is. Sometimes it's just that parents are busy. They're rushing because they've got to go off to work. But sometimes there's things like anxiety, lack of confidence, fear. But you have to, before you can actually break those barriers down, you have to recognise what those barriers are. So the more time you spend, you know, working and building that relationship, the better it will be. There will be times when you will need to give parents direct advice around things. But that, if you sit that within the context of a relationship, they'll take the advice. If you sit it in without the relationship and start telling parents what to do, they won't, and they'll disengage. So thinking about when you invite parents in, activities that you invite them into, try and avoid things like workshops, because that implies I'm going to have to do some work here, or I might be showing myself up, or I'm not going to go to that because, you know, I'm not confident enough. But get them involved and get them in so you can model good practice with children. Just inviting them to come and enjoy a story where you read a story and they sit with their child and listen has a massive impact, because they start thinking, oh, that's how it's done. Oh, I can do that. As opposed to come to a workshop where we're going to tell you about how to read to your child, has a very different connotation. Making sure that information is not you don't overload them with information, telling them what to do. It's never been easier to access information than it is now. So think about what you can put online for, and signpost parents to, so they can access information when they need it. And then make sure your face-to-face relationships are based on, you know, they're relationship-based rather than giving information-based. We, when I did some research with parents around what they knew about their child's learning in the early years foundation stage, we found, and we did these focus groups right across the country, and we found that not one single parent mentioned the EYFS. They didn't really, that wasn't on their radar at all. And yet every setting leader we spoke to said, oh yes, we tell our parents all about where their children are at, where they're up to in the early years foundation stage, etc. But parents weren't hearing that. So try not to, I guess, use too much jargon. Try and have real conversations with parents around their child, where the parents contribute and you contribute, as opposed to saying, well, he's met this goal or he's doing that, or you know, trying to say where they are up to in the 17 areas of learning seems to just go over a lot of parents' heads. But if you talk about the child and keep the child at the centre, and you both talk about what he's doing or she's doing or what they need, what they could work on next, you get a much richer conversation. Sorry, I've talked quite a lot on that, but
no, that's brilliant. And I think that, you know, there is some really good takeaway kind of strategies that you can think about within your setting. So thank you for that, Maureen. That's brilliant.
Okay.
So you mentioned a couple of people with research. Is there anybody that's that people could go and read now that kind of talks about parents and partnerships? And is there anybody that's kind of on point? Obviously yourself, Maureen, but is there anybody that would you recommend a book or
Without, you know, blowing an achievement for all trumpet, I would look on there because there's a lot of good stuff about parent partnerships on there.
Yeah.
I would also look at, I'm trying to think of the name now, it's gone out of my head. I'll get you a link and send you over a link. Perfect. There is somebody who has some good books. And obviously EPSI, well worth looking at. And look at the Charles DeForge research. It's quite an interesting little read, actually, but it's shocking. Yeah. What he shows is the younger the child, the more influence the parent has. And as children get older, the parents get less influence, and school gets a greater influence. And of course, anyone who's brought up teenagers will know and recognise that once they get to that stage, they don't listen to a word they say. So, yeah. But that does bear out, doesn't it? Yeah.
So You mentioned a book at the beginning. You said that you were writing a book. Are you able to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, the book is a reflective book. Every chapter starts with an anecdote based from something that happened to me in my, which is now 40-year career, which is quite, it's a long time, isn't it? It's gone in a blink, really. So every chapter, I've got chapters on inclusion, disadvantage, working with parents, transitions, you know, the regular stuff that you might expect to see there. But every single chapter starts with an anecdote or a story that I have taken from my practice that led me down a different road to where I was before.
Right.
Because I think reflective practice is a hugely powerful way of improving. Some of them were light bulb moments. Some of them display how badly I got it wrong at times, how I needed to, you know, work out better ways to do things, and led me down the roads to research and development of ideas. And some of them are just simple stories about things that have happened. So it's not an academic read. It's a simple, reflective read around my, you know, develop my practice, really.
That sounds really, really exciting. And
if you were writing it.
I know what it's like writing a book, but I think, you know, anything that kind of gets you as a practitioner to reflect on your practice is ultimately and one thing that you've just said was that actually you've reflected and maybe you didn't get everything right.
I certainly didn't get everything right. No. You know, right from the word go, when I took on my first reception class, it was a real shock to me. Well, you know, yeah. I had no idea what I was doing, you know. But I only got better with time. But I actually also say in the book that I'm still not there. I've still got loads to learn and I need another 40 years to kind of, you know. But then I suspect I still wouldn't get it right.
No, and I think that's a quite a powerful message, because I think if we go back to, you know, working with parents and, you know, that whole relationship, you're not going to always get it right.
No.
And, you know, that's where reflective practice kind of comes into its own, because it's okay not to get everything right, you know, that you learn from that.
Well, actually, some of my better practice has come out of my poorer practice, because it's shaken me into doing something about it, researching and looking at research and trying things a different way. So I actually think you know, getting everything right would lead you to a place where you're complacent.
Yeah.
You actually need to recognise that things are not that good sometimes and that you need to do something about it.
Oh, well, do you know, I'm looking forward to that book, Maureen. So anything else that we're likely to see from you? Obviously, you're not ready to give up work yet. So even though you've done 40 years. So.
No, I'm not ready yet. I'm going to concentrate on writing training, consultancy. Yeah. I'm still Achievement for All. I still lead the work there. I just love it, Aaron. I love being part of the early years sector, and as diverse as and complex as it is what makes it so interesting.
It is interesting. I love being part of it. You learn so much. Every day is very different, isn't it? So
it is.
You know. Okay, so that leads us to the last bit. And everybody gets asked this question. So everyone gets the same question. So if I could grant you three wishes, what would they be?
Oh, three wishes. Right. I would like that strategies for working with parents and developing learning partnerships was part of early years training. Because when I have been around the country talking to people about parent partnerships, I always ask the question, how many people here have had training in how to work with parents, and I've never yet had a single hand go up.
No, interesting
It is interesting, and when you consider how important it is, I think it's quite shocking. So that would be my first wish.
Great, yeah.
My second wish would be for every parent and family to have access to the support they need so they can fully support their children. So we can get rid of this awful disadvantage gap that we've got in this country. And then I think linked to that, I would have to say the third wish was be for children's centres to be fully funded and universally available so that, you know, to enable that to happen.
I think the third one for me is, you know, if the government actually really wanted to, I mean, after this coronavirus pandemic, children's centres now would be the answer for much of our early childhood sector. And I completely agree, you know, invest right from the start, and then we wouldn't have this disadvantage gap, which is growing, actually not getting better.
It is growing. We've got the widest disadvantage gap in the top five wealthiest countries in the world. I think it's crazy. More food banks than McDonald's in our country now.
Yeah, I saw that the other day, and that is just absolutely staggering, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I live in an area where there is no children's centres. They got rid of them all. And there is not even any kind of universal offer. Early help doesn't really exist.
No.
And you can see it. You can see those communities that really want to make that difference to their children. And they're doing the best that they possibly can. And, you know, I always say this, the love that they show for their children is just immense. But there's just no support. There's nobody to talk to. There's nobody to even just, you know. And for me, who's actually engaging with those parents? Who's making those relationships? Well, it's been left down to the earlier sector now, isn't it? So
That's it. It has been left to the early years sector, and I think the early years sector can rise to that challenge. I'm not saying that they've got a magic wand and they can solve everything, but if you are the person, the key person that the parent sees every day, you have got an opportunity there to build that really supportive relationship, focused on the needs of the child and the family. You can make a big difference by doing that.
Oh, well, Maureen, that kind of brings us to the end of our podcast, but I'm going to leave it there because I think there's another podcast about, early help and really supporting children through like an early help within early years. I mean, would you come back and have a chat about?
I'd be really happy to. I mean, there's lots and lots of practical things that they can do, but I don't want to sit here and promote my book because that's not why I came on, but I am writing in my book lots of practical suggestions about how to do this, because it's you can't get this across in sort of 25 minutes. It's not that
so
easy.
So when will your book be out? So when are we likely to see your book?
It's going to the publishers end of this month, so okay. I don't know what their timescale will be on it, but I would have thought by early autumn.
Lovely. Okay, yeah. So if everybody's interested, Maureen Hunt's book will be out potentially autumn time. I'm sure we can put a link to it, but we won't have this as the last podcast. We will have another one probably Brilliant. Before then. So yeah. Maureen, thank you so much for coming to join us.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. Lovely to talk to you, Aaron.
You. Yeah. And bye everyone, and thank you for connecting with me and Maureen this week. Take care.